listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby, broadcast live to the cosmos on the Heritage Radio Network.
Happy Sunday and welcome to another episode of Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby, and our show today is being produced by Jack Inslee and engineered by Dan Brindell. Today's show is sponsored by Acme Smoked Fish. Located in Greenpoint, Brooklyn, Acme has been a mainstay in New York's culinary landscape for over 55 years. Using old world recipes, Acme produces the finest smoked salmon, whitefish, and sable that discerning palates demand. For information on where to find Acme, Blue Hill Bay, or Ruby Bay products, visit acmesmokedfish.com. So today's show is the beginning of a series of new shows that I want to start on Cutting the Curd called The State of Cheese. And we're going to start our State of Cheese series with California. Who knows? Maybe we'll start with the West Coast and move on. But the State of Cheese is a thing that I dreamt up to talk about what's going on in dairy in different states across the U.S. And it's going to take a while, but we're going to go state by state interviewing people involved in the cheese industry to see what's going on in their neck of the woods. So today we're lucky to have Peg Smith of Cowgirl Creamery and Tamales Bay Foods here with us to discuss the state of cheese in California. Thanks for being on the show, Peg.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
So maybe we can start off by just talking a little bit about what you do and how you got involved with cheese.
Well, we make cheese, and we don't have any cows. We make cow's milk cheese, and we're a small producer in Northern California. We make cheese in Marin County, and we also have a small production facility in Sonoma County. And both those counties are a little bit north of San Francisco. And we are so happy to be in that area and working with the dairies that we work with. And my business partner and I both came into cheese making from a cooking background, and we felt it was kind of a natural extension of what we were doing, just to specialize on one really great ingredient and try and produce something that was respectable.
Well, respectable is an understatement. Now, your cheese line, you guys do, Cowgirl Creamery produces Red Hawk, which is that the most well-known cheese, do you think, of your line?
I think it's, you know, since it's a little bit unusual because it is smelly, and people really remember smelly things, and so I think it probably is the most well-known, yeah.
But so what are some of the other cheeses that you guys produce?
Well, we make fresh cheese, and that's actually how we started. The idea that we had was that we wanted to take some really great milk that was being produced in West Marin by a fella named Albert Strauss and his family, and he has Strauss Family Creamery, and it was the first organic dairy west of the Mississippi. And the milk was so delicious that we wanted to just highlight that flavor. And so we started out by making clabbered cottage cheese and fromage blanc. We made cork, and we also made creme. We still do. We make creme fraiche. So we really started by just making fresh cheese in sort of a European tradition.
But the cottage cheese, if I can interrupt for 2 quick seconds.
Sure.
It's hard to find good cottage cheese in the world, and your cottage cheese that I had at your shop in D.C. is the best, hands down, cottage cheese that I've ever had. It is so delicious.
Oh, thanks. You know, it's an act of love in reality, because it is, it does take a long time to make. You have to stir the curds for for at least 40 minutes while they're cooling down. And I think most people don't want to spend that much time with just that simple process of stirring the curds. And so that is Sue's favorite cheese, actually. Sue's my business partner.
Sue Connolly, right?
Yeah, Sue Connolly, and that's her favorite cheese of all the cheeses we make is the cottage cheese.
Would you mind just telling us real quick what the process is for making cottage cheese? Because people actually ask me that all the time, and I don't have a good answer for them.
Yeah, well, I can tell you the process. The way we do it is first of all, we separate the milk. Because it's a non-fat cheese initially, and you separate the milk, and then you heat it we then pasteurize it.
Okay.
And then so you have the warm milk, and you add the cultures, and you let the cultures set for a bit so that those cultures, which are the bacteria and enzymes that are naturally found in milk but with different proportions to add different flavors, you add the culture and you let those cultures the flavors really seep into the milk. And then you add the rennet, and the rennet is the coagulant that pulls the proteins together. And so that sets it up. And this is, at this point, it's not curds in whey yet. Then we have these we call them cheese harps, that are a set of vertical and horizontally lined paddles that have almost like piano strings that run down them.
Mm-hmm.
And the paddles are about two feet long. And about 1 foot wide, and you have these strings that go through them. So you have a vertical and a horizontal ones. And at the proper pH setting, you run the paddles into that mass that's almost like a flan or a custard, and you cut it, and that's when you're cutting the curds. And so you want to cut it to a pretty exact size.
Okay.
So the curds are cut, and then after they're cut, you let it set for a minute, like slowly, slowly stirring. And as you're stirring, a lot of whey is expelled from the curds. So all of a sudden, you have these little white dots that are floating around in a mass of whey.
Mm-hmm.
You pull some of the whey off, and when we make this batch, we make it in 150-gallon batches. So you pull some of the whey off, and then what you need to do, or what we do, is we wash those curds with water that's a little bit warm, so it sets the curd. You know, it kind of tightens it.
It firms up a little bit.
Yeah, it firms it up. And you wash them, and then as you start stirring it for about 40 minutes, and that way the curds don't stick together. They have their, you know, each little curd has its own integrity,
mm-hmm.
And still more whey is being expelled from those curds as you're stirring. So then you at the point when they're done, you separate the curds from the whey totally. We use little baskets to pull the curds out.
Mm-hmm.
And then what we do is we dress the curds in the clabbered cream, which is it's a cultured cream. And clabbered's just an old-fashioned word for cultured. And
the British, or is that a British word or is that an American word, clabbered? I wonder.
I think it's British.
It sounds British. They have such a nice way of saying everything.
I know it's a good term. So then you also add the final ingredient to cheese making, which is salt. So you start out with milk, you have cultures, you have the coagulant, and then you add the salt. And so we salt it, and we also add the clabbered cream, and then it's ready to go.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I really think, I mean, cottage cheese is something I feel like that you can't really find much good stuff out in the market. And
right.
When I had your cottage cheese in D.C., it was like a revelation. It was so tasty.
Yeah, I think it's pretty good, too. I agree.
And it's a nice way to use, because you're skimming the milk to make the curds, and then you have, then you're putting the cream back into it. So it's kind of a perfect perfect product that way.
But it's it's still a non-fat product. You don't really add very much. It's reduced fat, I should say. Reduced fat product, because you don't add that much cream. You just want it to hold the curds together. Mostly in the marketplace, what you find are stabilizers that are added to the curds to bind them together.
Mm,
and mm-hmm. It's not as tasty.
No, not nearly. No. Not nearly. Well, thank you for indulging me in that tangent. But so you're saying you started with fresh cheeses.
Yes.
And then?
Well, and you have to remember that the whole idea behind us making cheese was really to promote this great dairy region that we live in. And in a lot of ways, the milk from Strauss Family Creamery. So we thought, well, let's make an aged cheese, but one we wanted to make one that was really accessible to people, that wasn't intimidating in people wanting to try it, and also that was really just a reflection of the milk and how the flavors change seasonally. Because working with a milk from a single dairy, which Albert has milks about 200 cows.
Okay.
So the milk isn't blended. You know, the milk that we all, or most of us, get from the market is a milk that tastes the exact same every single day. And that's intentional so that people won't be fearful of what they're drinking, or suspicious, I should say. But the milk flavors really change every single day, and it depends on the weather, what the cows are eating, whether it's sunny, whether it's foggy, whether it's freezing cold, you know,
where they are in their lactation cycle.
Yeah, exactly. There's so many factors in it. So we wanted to make a cheese that reflected that, but that was easy for people to eat. So we decided that we'd make a triple creme that was a bloomy mold, like one that you get on a rind that you could find on a Camembert or Brie, but had a little bit of sturdy. It was a little bit sturdy in its through its life, mm-hmm. And that's when we made Mount Tam.
So Mount Tam was the first, and then sort of, so was that, and then the Mount Tam kind of gave birth to all the other cheeses that you guys ended up doing, because I know then you also do some seasonal versions of Mount Tam, right, or in a similar format.
Yeah, it's a little bit different. The one that you mentioned before, Red Hawk, was actually an accidental cheese that happened from Mount Tam.
The best cheeses are accidental cheeses. I've heard so many of those stories over the years, and they're always the tastiest.
It's funny, isn't it? But, you know, Mother Nature really does have a lot to say about what we produce. And we were making some Red Hawks, and we were making Mount Tams, and Kate Arding, who's with Culture Magazine now, was working with us, and we had some Stilton that she had put in the same aging room as the, or maybe it wasn't Stilton, but it was a cheese that actually attracted mites,
uh-huh.
And so some cheese mites jumped on a couple of the Mount Tams, and Sue didn't want to lose those cheeses, so she thought she'd wash them and then re-inoculate them with the Candida mold. And in the course of washing them and setting them aside in their own little environment, they attracted the bee linens that are prevalent out in Point Reyes, and the cheese became a washed drying cheese because she had washed the cheese, and then these bee linens were attracted to the rind, and it created a whole different cheese.
Isn't that funny? So what started as a disaster, you know, mites on your bloomy rind cheese, you're probably freaking out, all of a sudden becomes the most delicious thing ever.
Well, that's what we, you know, Sue pulled it out of the aging room one day, and she said, well, let's just see what this tastes like. And so Kate and Sue and I tasted it, and we all looked at each other with eyes that were wide, and we all had smiles on our face, so we thought, this is pretty good. Maybe we can try and do this again. I know, it was good. That was a good thing.
Well, I was, unfortunately, we have to take just a really quick break right now, but when we come back, I would love to talk to you more about Red Hawk and the evolution of your other cheeses, and then also what's going on in the state of California. We'll be back on Cutting the Curd in just a second. Welcome back to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby, and my guest today is Peg Smith of Cowgirl Creamery and Tamales Bay Foods. And when we last left off, we were talking about Red Hawk, which is a delicious, stinky, and it turns out accidental cheese that has made its impression on the hearts and bellies of many across the country. I would love to chat with you a little bit more about the Strauss family, because in doing some research about the state of California and the history of the state and the dairy history of the state, it turns out that the Marin County area and the Tamales Bay area was always kind of the dairy center of the state. And it really makes sense because the climate is so much more friendly to dairy and to grass and to, you know, and to cows and their temperaments, and they're not liking it to be too hot and all those kinds of things. So was the Strauss family dairy an old business, or was it a relatively new business when you guys started working with them?
Well, it was an old dairy that, relatively old. It was started by Albert's dad, Bill Strauss, in 1937. And Bill had emigrated from Germany, and he wanted to start a dairy, and he got some land in California. And after a short while, which was an interesting courtship process, he met Ellen, and Ellen, who was also an immigrant from Amsterdam, they married and were farmers out in the Point Reyes region for, their dairy's still going. Neither Ellen nor Bill are still alive, but Albert has the dairy now. And in 1992 or so, Albert transitioned the dairy from conventional to organic. And it surprisingly, like I, as I said, it was the first organic dairy west of the Mississippi, which is crazy. You know, all the dairies, I'd say, were organic until probably the late 40s and early 50s.
Huh.
And it's it is an interesting dairy region.
Now, can you explain to our listeners why you say that? Why the dairies were organic until the late 40s, and then what changed?
Well, what changed was the war, and World War II, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And during that time, there were lots of we were producing milk for the United States. A lot of milk came from California. It still does.
Yeah, you guys are the number one dairy state now.
Yeah. Well, it's a pretty big state, and I don't want to get sidetracked, but right now, I mean, a lot of the dairying that's done is done by huge, huge dairies, and there is also a good co-op system that works within California, where there are small dairies that pull their milk, and then it goes to a larger location. What happened was we needed to produce more food for the country because there was a huge population growth, and so a lot of the dairy farmers transitioned their dairies from Jersey cows, which are rich milk producing cows but not a large volume, to Holstein cows, which are kind of milk tanks. They produce probably a third more milk than the Jerseys, so most dairy people transition their farms to Holstein cows, and they were producing more milk and cheese and butter, and it was to help provide food for a growing nation. And in doing so, what happened was ways were developed to grow food faster using pesticides and things, and antibiotics were being given a little more freely to prevent disease so that full herds wouldn't be sickened and rapidly. And so a lot of people transitioned to a more scientific way of producing. Yeah. And Albert decided that he would transition to organic with beliefs that maybe a lot of this scientific production wasn't as healthy as organic.
Which was very forward-thinking because, in conventional dairy, it's a kind of a, I don't know, it seems like it's kind of a brotherhood, you know, and your neighbors,
yeah.
There's kind of a, everyone exchanges information and talks to each other about how they farm. And I know that a lot of the early converts to organic caught a lot of flack from their neighbors other dairymen for doing that.
Well, yeah, people, people are suspicious when you change the way of the norm. And it's kind of human nature. And I know that that right now, you know, it's been a very positive thing because a lot of the dairies have transitioned to organic. You can get a better price for your milk. You know, milk prices really haven't changed because they're controlled, and milk prices really haven't changed in the last 30 years.
Isn't that amazing? And you think about what a gallon of gasoline cost in the 70s,
yeah,
versus now, and to think that milk hasn't changed at all, it's pretty unrealistic.
How can you have a business model that operates with the end product not not keeping steady with inflation or just with prices
the cost
in general?
Doing business. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was. It took a while for the other dairy people out there in Marin to catch on, but a lot of them are organic now, and really are practicing really good habits, I'd say.
So who else can we talk about in Marin County that is sort of practicing this kind of responsible dairying, be it other dairies or cheesemakers? Or it seems like there's a lot going on in that region.
There is a lot going on. I mean, the Giacomini family that makes Point Reyes Original Blue, and now I know they have a new cheese called Toma. They're big leaders in the dairy community out there, and they're transitioning some of their herd to organic, and they're really they're farmstead cheesemakers, which is great because it's promoting the value added product to being a dairy farm, and that's really helped a lot of the farmers out there. There are more and more that are coming on to cheese making and doing specialty butters and things like that, which is really a boost to the dairy industry in West Marin and Sonoma.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, as I was mentioning before, I was looking at actually that Real California Milk website the other day, just looking up, you know, some dairy trivia, and I was giggling because it said, you know, the first cows were actually brought to California, according to them, by this man, Junipero Serra, who established a lot of the missions along the coast. And he, you know, and those cows were used for milk production and cheese production. But by 1866, Point Reyes was really the dairy center of California. And then also that was the birthplace of Monterey Jack, which I did not know about. I had never put the two things together. Go ahead.
Well, actually, that dairy was down in Monterey, which is a little bit
south.
Which
is a little further south. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true. But whole sort of coastal area being an important dairy area.
Yeah, it looks a lot like Ireland. I don't know if you've been to Ireland or not, but our ambient temperature in Point Reyes is about 65 degrees, and it's sort of like that Mark Twain quote, the coldest winter I ever spent was a summer in San Francisco.
It's so true.
That really holds true to Point Reyes because it's usually a little bit foggy, and it's right on a bay. It's a peninsula, and so we have lots of sea breeze, and it keeps it humid. Well, not humid. It keeps it damp and cool. It's actually right where Sir Francis Drake Bay is right there, and that's where his ship anchored down.
Wow! Wow!
Yeah.
That's absolutely crazy. And cows, of course, too, love that weather. They don't
it
too hot or too dry. So that is like the perfect place.
Yeah.
I have actually somebody who just came into the studio that wants to say hello as well.
Well, Peg, this is Patrick from New York.
Patrick.
And
yes,
I just wanted
how are you
to,
doing?
I'm saying this as a thing. I'm great. Thank you. I just want to say this like an honest fan. I just want to say that I admire tremendously about the Cowgirls two things in particular. One is how you brought like artisanal farm culture and cheese culture to the footsteps of the White House. I think that location there is so subversive and awesome. And there isn't a senator or House of Representative that doesn't walk by that place and, you know, buy there or think they should.
Yeah, that was the idea. We're hoping that people would come in and look at what small producers are doing today in the United States.
And the other thing is not to date you, but, you know, the longevity with which you've been preeminent in your field is certainly something to aspire to for someone who's been in business just for like 7 years now. It's something to look up to. So congratulations on that. And that's all I have to say.
Aww.
Oh, thanks, Patrick. I appreciate all you do as well. And how about Anne?
Oh man, well, same. Yeah, I'm on the admirer. I'm in the fan club. I'm in the Cowgirl fan club. I think you guys are incredible, and yeah, have really I don't know, paved the way for so many great cheeses to get to market, and also you know, from working with the dairy farms on up, it's just it's inspiration for everybody to kind of change the way that they do business and realize that there's a lot more that they can get out of it.
Well, what I meant, Anne, was how about what you've done? Not,
aww.
Not what in your that beautiful shop that you have. I mean, I think that I remember going to visit your shop, and I think it was soon after you opened.
Very soon after. And I think that was like, I couldn't believe that you guys came. I was like completely starstruck.
Well, I think, you know, that's exactly what we need is the representation of what we're doing in the different regions and showcasing, you know, all these hardworking people and presenting them in a format that it's almost like a little jewel box where you're going into a jewelry store to see those beautiful cheeses that people are producing, and it's really something to be applauded.
Oh, well, thank you so much. Well, since I don't have access to a lot of the cheeses that come from your neck of the woods, could you give us a rundown of a couple more of your favorites that come from California?
Oh, sure. Well, I already mentioned the Giacomini's and their Point Reyes and their new cheese. Of course, you know, we have the beautiful Humboldt Fog from Cypress Grove, and we have Jennifer Bice, who's with Redwood Hill, who makes delicious goat milk cheeses, and Cindy Callahan and Liam of Bellwether Farms, first dairy, the first sheep's dairy west of the Mississippi.
Wow.
We have lots of newcomers like Marcia Baranaga, who is has a sheep dairy, and she's making Bath-style sheep's milk cheese, and, you know, Winchester and... Oh, gosh, this puts me on the spot because I don't want to forget anybody. We have so many great cheesemakers here in California.
Well, if somebody wanted to learn more about California cheeses, is there any website that's kind of like, an artisan cheese guild or anything like that where people could learn about the producers and get some more information or...
Funny you should mention that, but we do have a California Cheese Guild, and it has a website, and all the producers are mentioned, most of the producers, because not everybody's a member, but lots of producers are mentioned on the website, and I think it's called CaliforniaCheeseGuild.org.
Okay. So CaliforniaCheeseGuild.org, or if you Google California Cheese Guild.
If you just search it, you should find the website. But it's a pretty good website.
And also, Cowgirl Creamery is an awesome resource for anyone who wants to learn more about these cheeses. And a very cute website to boot. I really, really like the sort of the hand-drawn quality of your website. It's very cool.
Well, we do have a part of on our website that's called the Library of Cheese, and we try and outline the different producers that we work with and where they make it and what type of cheese and pasteurized, non-pasteurized, those kind of things are mentioned.
Oh, that's fantastic. That is absolutely fantastic. So is it cowgirlcreamery.com where people can...
It is, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And actually, the super speedy and talented producers here, they just got the web address for the Cheese Guild, and it's cacheeseguild.org.
So, oh, great. Thanks.
I'm impressed. I was like, wait, what is on this piece of paper? Well, unfortunately, we have run out of time for the day, but I so appreciate you taking the time out of your Sunday to chat with us about the state of cheese in California and about how you started your business. It's been absolutely lovely chatting with you.
No, thanks. And I'm just, you know what? I couldn't be more delighted that there's a show on the radio about cheese.
Well, it's on the internet radio. It's on heritageradionetwork.com. We're going to hopefully log another 51 shows of all the other states and what's going on with cheese across the country.
Did we gain a few states?
Did we... 50... Oh, Patrick said 52. He's messing with me. He was talking about Puerto Rico and maybe there's cheese there too.
There is. All right. Well, thank you for having me, and it's great to talk to both of you.
Thank you so much, and we'll see you next Sunday on Cutting the Curd.
Bye.
Bye-bye.